listening to Radio Sputnik. Telling the untold.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, here with Sean Blackman. And as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. And we are back here, top of the hour, 5/15/2018, the 15th of May, 2018. Sean, we're back. We're still here. Tuesday. In 20 minutes, of course, we will be more than willing to take your phone calls here, 3:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So get yourself ready, get yourself prepared, take some notes, perhaps. Happy to hear what you have to say about anything in the first half of the show and anything we are talking about now or whatever is on your mind. But, Sean, that is not the only way individuals can interact with the show. Please enlighten our listeners, if you will.
Well, if folks want to reach out and touch by any means necessary with Eugene Perrier and Sean Blackman at 3:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can give us a call at 202-521-1320. That's 202-521-1320. Our operators are standing by. You can also hit us up on social media, facebook.com/BAM Necessary and on Twitter at BAM Necessary. You can download our shows on iTunes, where we would very much appreciate a nice rating from you, iHeartRadio and Spreaker. That's Spreaker. You can hear us live on SputnikNews.com and on 105.5 FM here in Washington, D.C. But wherever you are in this world, we want to hear from you.
We do indeed. We do indeed. We're here. We're back. Not a lot of huge news. Right. CNN, the number one thing they're reporting is that Meghan Markle's dad now has changed his mind. He wants to go to the Royal Reading, Sean. So I know you're on the edge of your seat about that one. Yeah. We are, however, joined here on the show as we continue by Dr. Jared Ball, who is the curator of I Mix What I Like. imixwhatilike.org. I definitely can recommend you spend quite a bit of your internet listening time there. Jared, thanks so much for being with us again.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'd say the pleasure is all ours, as always. Outside of the headline I just gave to you, Sean, anything here really catching your eye, as it were?
Yeah, well, Dr. Ball, yesterday on the show, we talked a little bit about all this furor around the This Is America song and video by Donald Glover, otherwise known as Childish Gambino, and I actually saw that his song is now the number one song in America. Literally, it is number one on the Billboard Hot 100, replacing Drake's Nice for What, which, of course, was supported by the X Factor sample by Lauryn Hill and the voice of New Orleans bounce legend Big Freedia. It's got 119 million views on YouTube with the official video. And, you know, there's been a lot of folks, as I mentioned, that have been kind of breaking down the imagery. In my opinion, maybe giving some depth to things where there isn't actually a lot of it. But, you know, as a curator of hip hop and radical politics, I'm just curious how you're feeling about all this.
So the first thing, I thought is that I appreciate Glover's talent musically and in terms of his acting. And to the extent that I engage in, pop culture at all, I do like his music. I do like the show Atlanta, at least the first season. I haven't caught up to this new one yet. And I think he's a talented cat, but the issue that I always have is the confusion of pop cultural allusion or symbolic reference to something meaningful and the actual substantive politics that make all that symbolism mean anything. So the Black Panther symbol, just as a popular example, is meaningful only because of the politics that it represented and that drove that symbol into meaning in the first place. So, you know, a lot of the discussion that I've seen around Glover's video is I think people looking for, and I think, Sean, this might have been maybe a point you might have been referring to, is what I think happens all the time. People are looking for redress to what they're living in real life in a symbolic world. And I think that's dangerous given the context of our media environment, which is why, by the way, I have been pitching a new frame to my old argument, which is that I want us to adopt what I am calling the Vernon philosophy. And the Vernon philosophy, because I could hear you and all your listeners asking, what did he mean by the Vernon?
Yeah, I was stroking my chin. You know, I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
The Vernon philosophy refers to a brother that I used to deliver pizza with many, many years ago, who outside in the parking lot one night said to me, Jared, I am never going to go see another film with black people in it. And at the time,
you used to deliver pizzas with Spike Lee?
No. I delivered pizza with who would have been Radio Raheem. Well, one day we have to have a conversation just about that. There are many comparisons that I almost went off on a tangent and lost your whole show.
Vernon Principle. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's on me. And I think I actually might have just said Spike Lee when I meant to say Wesley Snipes. So I'm causing all sorts of problems here. Please continue.
I just started thinking about Do the Right Thing and the delivery and all. I mean, a lot of things started happening. But, and also for anybody who reads science fiction, particularly Marxist science fiction, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash is where we might be headed with that pizza conversation as well, where you have a mixed race protagonist, pizza deliverer, superhero. So that's another conversation. Actually dovetails nicely with where I'm wanting to go kind of with this. Anyway, but we're standing outside one night and he's telling me he's not going to go see any more movies with black people in it. And at the time I was like, how could you say that? I mean, you know, no more Eddie Murphy movies. Like it doesn't even make it, like, how can you live like that? I've now come, it took me many, many years to catch up to him. But I think I have now reached that same conclusion. And my point is that, and it's not just for black people, but I would argue for anybody who identifies as anything, even whether it's racial, gender, or political, that you should never look for your story or look for to identify with any pop cultural commercial driven media product. Primarily because A, it's meant to do just what it often does. It engages us to the point where because it is known we are looking for that, and it is known that we are starving for droplets of symbolic redress to real life material problems that will never be addressed, and then we get lost in a lot of either false hype around celebrity, which is always a mistake, even someone you might like I've said, I like Glover, or someone that others that, you know, more easily picked out as distasteful. But it also, I think, it encourages us to reattach ourselves to a system that I think we need to be more and more making breaks with, if not anywhere else cognitively. So, when I see all and again, Sean, I don't want to project onto you, but when I see what I think you were saying happen, where people are looking for a lot of depth that I don't see in this or any other commercial product, you know, I want to just be more aggressive in advocating something else. I'm not going to go so far to say don't engage it at all. I don't think that's possible or realistic, but I will say don't look for yourself in it at all. And then when you think you do see yourself, be extremely, extremely suspicious. And that is, in summary, the Vernon philosophy.
Yeah, we're here live on 105.5 FM, 1390 AM on your dial in Washington, D.C. And you know something, Dr. Ball, this whole thing around this particular song, it kind of makes me think about sort of broader issues within hip hop as a genre, and perhaps more specifically as an industry. And maybe this also has impact on other branches, if you will, of American pop culture. to where I almost feel like there's like a woke industrial complex to where we've got the one side of hip hop that today is characterized mostly by, you know, what some people term mumble rappers. I think that's kind of a misnomer in some cases. But, you know, your little Yachty's, your little Uzi Verts, you know, your little Zan or whoever.
one of them.
I was legit trying to think of a third one.
I hear you.
I'm 30, dog. I'm getting there. But yeah. And on the flip side, though, you've got, you know, folks like Childish Gambino or J. Cole and, you know, even Kendrick, who, you know, to different degrees engage with these social and political issues. And to your point earlier about the media landscape, which I think makes our bar for that discourse to be so low, we sort of hold folks up as champions of these causes. And I agree that it also has to do with this sort of celebrity obsessed culture that we have in the United States. But again, I just think it comes down to an issue of how it serves to skew our consciousness. And it seems like many folks aren't even necessarily aware of it.
Well, I mean, routine listeners to this show don't need me to make this point, but anyone paying attention to what's happening in the world at all will see that materially, nothing that Glover is pointing to in this video is being dealt with. So when he's talking about the police brutality against black people, and I'm seeing some people get excited about seeing this reference in a relatively, well, not relatively, an extremely pop cultural symbolic way. The report came out this week about the Palantir program and mm-hmm. LAPD using social media and the media environment to Minority Report, pun intended, movie reference, pun intended, and all of that, to predict crime, mm-hmm. predict who will commit crime. So my point is that, like, it's only to say that I just don't want any, I don't want to support any tendency, even in my own, in myself, because I'm guilty of the same thing. I'm susceptible to the same processes that we're all stuck under. To see this and become excited and to see this as an advance or to see this as progress or to see this as a moment that you know, others were trying to say we're in with the Me Too thing and with Kendrick getting a Pulitzer, by the way, which I see as the exact opposite. You know, when I see hip hop at the Kennedy Center and when I see Kendrick getting a Pulitzer, I think nothing but co-optation and crushing the potential for radicalism. I mean, that's and anyway, that's a whole other thing. Anyway, that's why I'm just very suspicious that now if we start to see political movements emerge that match the ferocity of the video, or if we see, you know, redistribution of wealth and services in a way that matches the ferocity in the video, then, I mean, I'll happily say I was wrong, or I've been maybe more praised the art itself. But I just, so this is not a condemnation of Glover or any particular artist. This is just wanting me and the rest of us to be careful about what we get excited around, because it is being put there for a reason. It is being allowed there for a reason. And the other thing I just want to bring up, I don't know how much we would want to get into this, but as a product of interracial marriage or relationships, I do have to point out that I am somewhat fascinated that videos and critical thought like this at this pop cultural level are coming out from, in this case, a black man with a white girlfriend, or whether it's my man who did Get Out, who is himself both mixed and with a white woman. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know exactly what's going on. I don't know exactly what to say other than, you know, my little joke that nobody knows white people or white supremacy better than black people in the United States. And within that group, those of us with white parents know it better than anyone. But other than that, I don't know exactly. But I couldn't help but notice that. And I put it out there. I don't know exactly what that means.
No, it's interesting. I mean, all I noticed, and I just want to say that my commentary about this yesterday, I am very much hoping that I get nominated for the 2018 Hate Awards from I Mix What I Like, because I was hating relatively hard on Donald. It wasn't the hardest I could go remotely, but I was hating. But be that as it may, I mean, the only reason I have not watched the video, as I said yesterday, the only reason this even came into my consciousness was I saw a few black women who I follow on Twitter and my timeline, like, really coming at Donald Glover. And I was like, I was not even aware. I don't know anything about him. I'm a hater. So of him. So, you know, what do you want me to say? As I told you yesterday, Sean, I'm not a huge fan. So I did not know this about him, but how that kind of became its own subset of conversation to me was interesting, how that kind of started to overgrow some other elements of what people have been talking about. I mean, I don't have anything really to say about that of note, but I did think it was sort of interesting how quickly that grew in and of itself as a meme, like who he was and is he in his personal life, you know, not who he says he wants to be vis-a-vis, I don't know, whatever people perceive him to be representing on a national scale. I don't know, in a public persona. I don't really know what it was about, to be honest with you. I was just looking to a lot of people kind of ragging on his shape up and saying that in and of itself.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it hurt. It was rough, but it's Twitter. So, I mean, That's the end of the day. Like, that's what's going to happen to you. But, I mean,
stuff about his sloppy belly, too. But, yes. But I also saw that being praised, this someone being willing to do that, saying, like, I'm not going to spend 10 months in the gym before I take my shirt off on camera.
And I respect that. But let me ask you this. Let me get to the heart of what I was saying, too. It's to some degree my critique, Jared, of the whole piece, and it's not just Donald Glover. I was saying this to Sean a little bit yesterday off air as well, is I feel like there's this whole new thing around, you know, this sort of quote unquote redefinition of black masculinity, which I don't even know what that means. And it feels to me mm-hmm. like it's a very media driven narrative. A lot of it coming from sort of like the more glossy fashion Hollywood magazines. And it's like trying to find, it's just like finding any black person who I guess doesn't fit the caricature of what black people are supposed to be, putting them on the cover of the magazine, and they're either redefining black masculinity or defining a different way to be black in Hollywood than whatever. And I don't know, just something about that conversation really rubs me the wrong way. And I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I think what it really is it feels like so much of that conversation is being carried by a caricature of black America that I don't really necessarily think black people ever really bought into. Yeah. And I think, you know, so much of it is driven by sort of the corporate reality behind hip hop, and that even being a stand in for what people usually treat as black masculinity. I'm now all over the place, and we only have about a minute until the break. We can come back on this, but I don't know if that made enough sense for you to comment on it, Jared, but I guess that's why I felt the wrong way. I don't know. Like, I just feel like, oh, great, Donald Glover is on here, and I don't know. But why was Wise Intelligent not everywhere with an intelligent album about similar? I don't know. I just, it rubbed me the wrong way, and I keep seeing it popping up in different memes and publications, and I don't know what it means or what it's really about, other than it seems to me to be like, oh, yeah, black people, they're not super predators anymore. Like, that's what it feels like.
Well, I will maybe attempt something better after the break, but in the short time before then, I would just quickly want to restate my point about the Vernon philosophy. And this is sort of my point, that it doesn't matter whether we're talking specifically about blackness or black maleness or a certain politics or any particular thing that we identify with individually. We have to be skeptical when we see it being delivered to us. And I think you touch on a very valid point. To the extent that I kept up with you, I think I understand what you're saying, and I think I agree. But this is why I'm saying we need to be skeptical, because on the one hand, it's very similar to what Malcolm X once said about the press. They can make you hate one group and love them the next, you know, one day and love them the next. It's the same thing that is being done, I think, with masculinity, with black manhood, with many different so-called identities or genres or subgenres of art.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more with Dr. Jared Ball and ourselves, of course, on By Any Means Necessary, Radio Sputnik, Washington, D.C. We'll be back. Stay with us.
By Any Means Necessary.
Mainstream news coverage catches the big moments.
60 people confirmed dead.
Brexit means Brexit.
We will make America great again.
But what about the stories behind the stories?
The untold stories hidden beneath the mainstream.
Several hundred guys on voluntary starvation.
Intelligence agencies cannot admit they make a mistake.
If they tell me back, I will kill myself.
Sputnik's daily global current affairs program, World in Focus, with Jack Foster and Carolyn Scott.
Join us live from Sputnik Studios in Edinburgh, Scotland, every weekday from 4 p.m. in the UK, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 7 o'clock in Moscow.
We call Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan the most disruptive radio show in America.
It's a great show, and we have a lot of fun.
We come to you live from Washington, D.C. every Monday through Friday morning.
What I like best is that we bring in experts from all over the world.
From Barcelona, from Egypt, from Seoul, South Korea,
from Newark, New Jersey.
We try to bring people great guests,
great calls from our listeners, and, of course, stupid jokes.
And we do it with two hosts that have very different viewpoints.
Now, here's the thing, Garland. A lot of people would think you and I would just argue. I mean, I'm a Republican Trump supporter.
And, of course, I am a progressive Democrat Bernie Sanders supporter.
The surprising thing is how much we actually agree on.
And you won't be surprised because you're going to find out just how much you agree and just how much you enjoy this show.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, here with Sean Blackman. And as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movement shaping the world around us. And we are back. Of course, you can give us a call if you would like, 202-521-1320, 202-521-1320. Still joined here by Dr. Jared Ball. We left off talking a little bit about the ripple effects maybe from the Donald Glover piece and how that should do things. The Vernon philosophy that Dr. Ball has given us here, which I have to say reminds me of the section from The Message to the Grassroots by Malcolm X. It's the show By Any Means Necessary. That is the genesis of the quote that many of us know, too black, too strong. And that sub quote of the speech, The Message to the Grassroots, is it's just like when you've got some coffee that's too black, which means it's too strong. What do? You integrate it with cream. You make it weak. But if you pour too much cream in it, you won't even know you ever had coffee. It used to be hot. It becomes cool. It used to be strong. It becomes weak. It used to be to wake you up. Now it puts you to sleep. That to me encapsulated to some degree, Jared, the Vernon philosophy. When you were saying that, I kept thinking about that quote. So I wanted to just give it for our listeners, but I'll let you continue here because we were talking a little bit about, I think, you know, how this is related to sort of the general sort of the skepticism that should come with the uses and abuses, I guess, of pop culture trying to make progressive messaging.
Well, I mean, it's again, you know, whether it's the name of your show or any other commemoration, I mean, it just speaks to the continued genius of Malcolm X, and whether it's about the strength in terms of a racial content of a movement or the political strength of a particular position, it's I think the very same thing. So it's almost, and I honestly haven't worked all of this out, and it's just sort of a feeling, and I'm just sort of now riffing off of the point you were making before. So I'm happy to be and welcome any principal criticism here. It's almost, if I think about it very quickly, it's that this thing about, well, okay, once upon a time, black people, you were saying you wanted more black people on TV and you were mad that you didn't see enough of yourselves, and, or you only saw the, you know, the Step and Fetch It type of character. You want to see more of yourselves. Well, fine. We'll give you more of yourselves. But the goal, of course, is still that more will be given in such a way that appeases the sentiment of a mostly white, affluent, middle-class audience and commercial-driven advertising base. So we'll give you versions of yourselves that make us feel okay. So and then, by the way, and this is, I would say this is also caught up, and this is why I caution those in the LGBTQ community to learn from this, not just co-opt or borrow from, or make, you know, empty, reference to the black liberation struggle, but to actually learn from it in the sense of what was done media in terms of media co-optation, and look at it the same way, to say the same, like in this sense that, okay, you want more LGBTQ reference, you know, and more colorful, more diversity. Well, we'll give it to you, and we'll give it to you in a way that makes us, meaning those in power, comfortable. And that is, in quote unquote, you know, softer tones, and, you know, more vague, needing a lot of conversation to fill in the gaps, political, symbolic stuff in the media or in art. But again, there will be no material. And I got to say this, because it keeps coming up, but it reminds me of the meeting that I was invited to years ago where I was told I could not speak and could only attend if I sat and agreed to sit in silence. And I did. And it was a long meeting where a bunch of people explained all the horrible conditions of all these different groups of people in this country. And then Jared Bernstein, then the chief economic advisor to the vice president, to Biden, the vice president at the time, got up, smiled, and said to everyone, "I appreciate what you've had to say, but we have no programs in the works that will address anything that you've raised today." And he smiled and shook everybody's hand and walked out the door. And that's sort of how I feel about all of this. It's like, okay, fine. We know you have problems. We know you have inequalities that you want addressed. We know you have reports, and we know you have desires, and we know you have interest in seeing yourself symbolically. We will give you a sprinkling of it, but it will come with nothing behind it. So you can spend all your energy dissecting it and being motivated or hating on it, whatever you want to do, but just as long as you don't politically organize yourselves around the issues that you're discussing symbolically in the media or in the art, then we really don't care. So I don't know if in that rambling, response, there's something of value, but that is in effect what we, so this is why I keep coming back. And it doesn't matter what group you are in the context of this media environment, where media are specifically and with increasing capability and sophistication, totally removing ourselves from any ability to understand our reality and to organize it into a better or out of existence or into something better. We cannot continue to be excited in any way by what we see being dripped off the table, or to borrow another Malcolm's analogy, dropping crumbs to us from those who are actually dining at this analogy at the media buffet.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a very good point. I think there's a lot of really relevant points. I mean, I felt 100% about that in the context of the Kanye thing, because the one thing that sort of came up in the context of that I think a lot of people miss, but it obviously, the announcement of it was obviously timed directly to impact with the fact that he had just endorsed President Trump or whatever he did. But Kim Kardashian pushing Trump for the pardon for the sister, I can't remember her name now, the elderly
Antonia
woman.
Brown.
No. I think it was the elderly woman who was in there for the drug charge or whatever. And it was even, but she's also working on the Centauri. But I just found myself thinking, I mean, fine, I guess. I mean, if she gets the pardon, she gets the pardon, and this woman should not be in prison. But I just thought, like, well, we're really in trouble if we're waiting for Kim Kardashian to put the pressure on to get this woman free. I mean, like, if you look at the history of people who have been pardoned and had their sentence commuted, it's usually because there's a mass outcry of huge numbers of people. Of course, Oscar Lopez Rivera being the most recent that I think many of us can think of. But just the fact, to speak to your point about just don't organize around it, it's sort of like creating celebrities as agents of change in and of itself sort of speaks to that, because, one, I think it speaks to the fact that most people feel heavily disempowered in the United States. I think the political system you look at like the Parkland students, and I've had my critiques of some of what they proposed and the like, but I think it's a good example because most of them aren't old enough to vote. But the whole sort of media conversation was like, oh, those people are going to be able to vote in 2 years. And I'm like, yeah, they didn't have to vote to change the whole political conversation in the country. So why is like the only way you're telling them to have any sort of, the kid, David Hogg, they almost shut down the woman's show on Fox News by getting all these companies to come down. And I'm like, you're basically telling these kids the only way they have to engage politically that's legitimate is like, well, once you turn 18, you can vote, when without the right to vote, they've actually proven that not only can they speak out intelligently, but they can move tens of millions of people, maybe not necessarily move a ton of policy, but some has moved in many states around the country, all without any of those kids and many of their child supporters being able to cast a ballot. And I just think that that's the type of stuff that's disempowering to people. And I think having celebrities, athletes or whatever as like kind of proposed change agents really builds into that and takes away from the idea of people, feeling that they, we have to be our own liberators, as it were.
Well, I mean, people, again, want to easily dismiss institutional analysis as conspiracy theory, but it is a matter of record. If I was just talking again the other day about the great book from a senior colleague of mine, Chris Simpson, The Science of Coercion. Mm. If you just look at the history of the relationship between the political, economic, and intelligence agency elite and the establishment of the field of communication studies research in this country, or if you just look at the the truly incestuous relationship between intelligence agencies and propaganda, psychological warfare study, and popular culture. They, in their own writings, I mean, they're very clear about their desire to shape public opinion and manipulate public and mass consciousness through celebrity. So it's not a matter of whether Jared says this is the case, or Sean and Eugene say this is the case, or think this is the case, or think we should be critical of it. It isn't even relevant whether or not anyone listening thinks they are susceptible to these efforts. It is only, I think, relevant to note that the attempt is being made to use celebrity to confuse and distract. And if we look at the historical record, I think my argument remains perfectly sound, unfortunately, which is that you can never be rich, famous, and politically radical at the same time. And any attempt historically to be rich, famous, and politically radical has ended poorly for that person, one way or another, pun intended, either financially or worse. Mm. So this is why when people say, well, it's the success equivalent to what you were just saying about voting. People say, oh, well, when they turn 18, they can vote. And then people will say, well, wait, when Tyler Perry finally gives us all this trash and becomes the top of Hollywood, he'll finally make his Asada Secor. Now, I'm not going to divulge who actually said that to me in an off the record argument, because this person was off the record and is somewhat famous and just so wildly wrong. I don't even think that they should be. But that was actually an argument made to me, that someone made to me. But the same thing happened. So, of course, by the time you get to where Tyler Perry is, you have sold out, or you are only there because you have a certain worldview. I don't even want to, I'm not even going to validate one way or another it's selling out, but you have a worldview that those in power find acceptable. And the same thing with voting. The only thing that these kids are going to be able to vote for in however many years they turn 18 is one of these two parties that isn't genuinely interested in any of the changes that they want to see, which is why, again, you're right that so many of them, and us and me included, want to see some sort of symbolic reference to something to give us some sort of sign of hope in the face of a reality we see isn't changing. But that's why I'm saying we have to be more aggressive in rejecting that and saying, I don't want to see that anymore. I don't even want to look for it anymore. So it's the point I tried to make with the Kanye issue was, let's focus less on what Kanye is saying and doing, and look more at those who are positioning him to be seen and heard doing what he's saying and doing, and why. And in that one popular picture with him in the Trump hat, he's hugged up with liar.
Yeah, that's also perhaps apropos,
right? Leo Cohen and Lucian Grange. I was just trying to point out, like, these two men, people don't even realize how powerful these two men are in determining who we think are good artists. We don't know who Kanye is, and we don't know who Kendrick is or anyone else if these two men don't say, we want you to know who they are. And that's just the reality of the situation. And they may be deserving of that level of fame because they may be that talented. That's another discussion. But the reality is they're only known to me, you, and everybody else because of these two men. And there's a reason for that. And these two men don't give a damn about the genuine interest of the poor and the downtrodden folks who are looking to Kanye for some hope. They don't care. And now that Cohen is going to be the head of YouTube's music, as I was trying to sadly joke, he's going to be telling my grandkids who they like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got to understand, like, that's the only point I keep. I don't want to talk about Kanye, and I don't want to talk about Glover at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're artists, they're doing their thing, they're struggling like the rest of us. I want to talk more about the structure that is making them possible, and that is also making the world we want to see impossible. That's where I think we need to. So yeah, I think Vernon was right. With, like, I guess this is almost 30 years ago now, and I think he's right today. We need to, if not fully walk away and just say, I'm not supporting them. I don't care. I don't care about another actress making millions of dollars. I don't, or not, as is the case with the Black Panther actors. They're not making that kind of, I don't care if they are or aren't making any money. I only care that they are being asked to participate in a process that is really aggressively working against our political interests. That's all I'm really, that's where I think we need to get to if we aren't there already. And I don't think we are, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's a very good point. I'll point people. I would rarely do this, but you know, Ross Douthat, the conservative writer who writes in the New York Times, had a very interesting piece. I don't know if you saw this, Jared, but pretty much saying that like it was directed at conservatives, and it was like, we don't know anything really about, like, the reason why conservatives don't do well in Black America is to some degree typified by what went on with the Kanye thing. And he talks a little bit about Candace Owens. I won't get deep into it, but, you know, some of her history, which I would say is, you know, hustler adjacent, if I could say more. But he basically was making the point, like, you know, the reality is a lot of right wing people are just extreme bigots who push systems and structures that aren't working for Black people, and then they hire a few Black people and get them to try to, you know, make it seem as if they're open-minded or whatever. But this is so, and his point is, it's so transparent. That's part of the difficulty that our side has really had in reaching people. And even though he's coming at it from a very different perspective, I thought it was a very perceptive article. I think many of his articles actually are very perceptive, despite his political leanings. I thought it was a perceptive article because it was a very good understanding, I think, of just sort of the reality of structural racism over and above individual racism, and the way that the people who are, you know, pushing behind many of these people, the Kanye thing and all of that, as you said, truly just don't care. You know what I mean? Like, to them, it's a means to an end to perpetuate something else they're trying to do. So I think it's a good point. I think it's a very relevant point.
But even just, again, bring it back to Malcolm and his whole fox and wolf analogy, I think the substance that you point out in this article needs to be with more strength and within noting the greater difficulty applied to what happens with the Democratic Party and liberals.
Mm.
The issue that it's yes, I think it's on some level easier to say, of course, we don't get tricked when we see the Republican Party hire a few Black and brown faces, or that ubiquitous Black woman I keep seeing behind every Donald Trump. Like, how is this same? They always say to buy just one, and she's right there, right behind him. Like, of course they're going to find that, and of course we're going to see that as obvious. The harder problem is that we don't see it when the Democrats do it.
Mm.
We don't see it. You know, I mean, how many people? We don't have to go back over the bodies that have been strewn over the 8 years of Obama and the Stevie Wonder visits to the White House and all that this meant for so many people and stuff like that. I mean, but this is the issue. Like, and this is sort of my point. So when we see Donald Glover presented this way, or when we see, you know, Matt Damon do a movie about, you know, the healthcare system in Elysium, or we see, you know, them do Syriana, which is a substantive film about, you know, the relationship, geopolitics and oil and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be confused into thinking that they are actually radicals who are down with the legitimate struggle, the real revolutionary struggles and tributaries in all of our movements. I don't think we should be confused. And then so many of us walking ourselves back to the Democratic Party. And by the way, to be fair, I think even the Green Party has its own version of the same problem. Like, there are these real issues that go beyond, that are still there, very racial in nature. And this real gap between just Black and white, so that the same thing could be said of even the so-called white left in their relationship to Black America, almost the same thing in terms of how much do they really understand. And then here they do the same thing. They reach out to their Black superheroes for their events too. And then we have almost a similar, a similar problem there. So, that Malcolm and Martin and everyone else, you know, so many others pointed out was a major issue of the white liberal progressive. So this is why, again, I just keep coming back to the Vernon philosophy. We just are. So the same thing, you like I didn't see it, and I meant to ask you about this, and I should have led to it before I, you know, got to wrap me up at least. But like when you see these films like about Karl Marx, somewhat more popular film, like, or you know, when I watch even the Albert Einstein series on the History Channel and stuff like that, where they make allusions to the radical politics of these people, you know, in ways that I don't think maybe we would have seen, you know, even a decade earlier. I still think we have to be careful. I still think, and I would ask you, like, you know, when you see references, do you do you at least see my point? Like, references beyond just this point about black people, but references to politics that you identify with and that you have a deeper understanding of.
No, it's a good question. We're going to go to a quick break. We're going to come back on that. I definitely want to talk more about that. By any means necessary, Radio Sputnik, Washington, D.C. We'll be back. Stay with us.
By any means necessary.
We are talking
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
You are listening.
We give you the most essential out of the endless information space.
Radio Sputnik, telling the untold. Tune in to Loud and Clear with Brian Becker for the latest news, commentary, and political analysis. What's really behind the political and social crisis gripping the United States and the world? If you're tired of a superficial and shallow reporting from the mainstream media, here's your alternative. Forget the spoon-fed soundbites from pundits who know so little about so much. We deal with real issues. War in the Middle East, the military-industrial complex, U.S.-Russian relations, the rise of China, austerity, mass migration, global warming, and social justice movements in the United States and around the world, and much more. We bring you independent experts, analysts, and activists. Learn what really makes the decision makers take from the boardroom of Wall Street to the West Wing of the White House. Here is where the people fighting for chance speak and are heard loud and clear. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik and SputnikNews.com.
Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, here with Sean Blackman. And as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping the world around us. Well, we're still here for about another 20 minutes. 202-521-1320, 202-521-1320, if you want to get in on the conversation with myself, Sean, and Dr. Jared Ball, who's still with us. And yeah, well, in general, yes, I think you are 100% correct. I would extend that even further back. And I'm going way back here, Jared, so you're going to have to forgive me, but I think that that's true. Other movies that are sort of progressive-ish where you wonder, like Reds is a good example of that. And I don't dislike Reds, with Warren Beatty about John Reed, who obviously wrote the famous 10 Days That Shook the World about the Russian Revolution. There's a few others that are just like that. The late 70s was a bunch of those, like, kind of progressive-ish working class movies like Convoy or whatever. So yeah, I saw Young Karl Marx. And yeah, I hear you. I think that there is definitely a need and a desire to be wary, because I guess, like, when I see a movie like that, and I saw the movie at the DC Film Festival, and, you know, I'm very happy to have had the opportunity to do it. But, you know, almost everyone in the audience, and this is to speak to your point, I think, very directly, Jared, and I think this was very interesting. They were almost all people from foreign countries who clearly had some connection to Marx and Marxism and or perhaps Raoul Peck. That sort of transcended their sort of placement in America. So there's a lot of people a lot of German folks, Spanish folks, who I think were bringing a very different frame to the context of the film, and a lot of people who are coming as families too, right? Which I also thought was interesting. And you could almost see sort of the juxtaposition. I found, like, wow, you know, it's interesting that there's not more Americans here, but it makes sense because I think that you have a lot of people, older people, who are coming from countries with stronger socialist communist movements, who probably have some sort of visceral non-movie relationship to this material and these people, and they really want to see this movie. And I found myself thinking on the way out, like, yeah, you know, I think the challenge with movies like this is the people who are going to come to see it maybe aren't necessarily the people who are going to appreciate it the most. I'm generally a fan of Raoul Peck. I will say, when he was the film minister, I think, or the minister of arts or whatever it was in Haiti, I think that was after Aristide was kidnapped and deposed for the second time. So I don't know how I feel about that. But generally, I like the guy. I like most of what he does. I certainly like Lumumba. I certainly liked I'm Not Your Negro. But I do wonder, if you're not really connected to anything outside of the Young Karl Marx movie, do you take from this, hey, that was a great movie? Or do you take from this, like, wow, it's pretty impressive that these two younger people overcame a lot of different odds and challenges to put together a corpus of theoretical thought and, to some degree, political practice that still lives on in the millions of people today. And maybe I need to figure out what that's really about and get with it. Or do you take away, it is possible to change the world? You could also ask, you know, you put it where you put it, and sort of the lead up and the making to the Communist Manifesto, which I think is fair. I think that's a fair time. But you could also ask, why not put it during the Paris Commune? Right. I mean, like, if what we're going to do is try to make a parallel between what's happening now and what's happening then, why not really directly juxtapose it and not just talk about people writing pamphlets, but people rising up, overthrowing the bourgeoisie and establishing their own government and then being drowned in blood? I mean, most people don't know. That's why the fist is so directly associated with socialist politics, because they say, this is what they say, that when they were, because they killed so many tens of thousands of people at the Paris Commune, that they were burying them all in these shallow graves, and some of them were so shallow, you could see that people still had their fist outraised out of the soil, and it was seen as a sign of defiance. And what's there's also the giant cathedral they built on top of one area to sort of mark the fact that they had defeated the Commune. So why not that, right? Like, and there's a lot of very interesting Marxist thought, theory, and things that came around his analysis of the Commune, his relationship to the Commune and certain individuals in it, that I would say is equally as relevant to our time. So you also have to ask yourself questions like that. Like, and I'm not hating on Raoul Peck, but is it that you can make the movie when it's the young Karl Marx because it's interesting, it's relevant? There's a lot you can take from it, and it was a good movie, but you can get that movie made, you know? Like, you could get 12 Years a Slave made, and I thought this was one of the best things I've ever heard Brad Pitt say, as he was like, yeah, you know, the reason I'm in there as a character is no one cared about this movie before, but once I started telling people, oh, Brad Pitt's going to be in it, all of a sudden, everyone wants to make it. So I wonder, like, is the young Karl Marx movie the Karl Marx movie you can get made and distributed, right? Right. And I don't know. And so, I don't know. I liked the movie. I enjoyed the movie. I didn't yet see the Einstein piece on the History Channel. I wanted to. I heard it was pretty good. But yeah, I feel similarly, Jared. I think that there's a lot of danger because sometimes we allude. I just watched Trumbo, by the way, this past week, which I thought was amazing. Fantastic movie. But I did find myself thinking sort of, yeah, but it's the big thing is it only sort of alludes to the fact that these people were part of this broad sort of radical-ish progressive communist-linked movement in the 30s and the 40s. It only kind of alludes to that. So do we lose something in the translation, even when I think the politics are okay, even when I enjoy the movie, that people who just aren't really in the know aren't going to take from that and say, yes, we can take action, which to some degree is the story of Dalton Trumbo, as you don't have to sell out, right? And you can push back and fight back. But I've now talked for forever, Jared, in response to your question. Hopefully that was to some degree an answer.
Fortunately, awash in my own contradictions, I got to get daughters to dance and piano classes.
That's very, very petty bourgeois suburban lifestyle there. That's the American exceptionalism.
And all of that should be put up for critique. And I actually mean that seriously. But I will just say very quickly that I think to your point, this is part of my concern and why I want to, I'll end with the Vernon philosophy where I began, which is because you can tell stories truncated in such a way that there's an appearance that you're telling them. That's why Malcolm X claims to be about Malcolm X when it's really 90 minutes of you know, hustlerism and all that other stuff, and nothing, almost nothing about his actual politics, or why Trumbo can do what it can do, where not only going in the direction that you talk about it didn't go fully in, but it doesn't also, as much as I enjoyed the film, doesn't fully go into the politics connected on the other end as to the, in terms of the function politically of Hollywood and the state. That is, why do rich men, rich, mostly white men of extreme means, want to make sure certain politics are not put in film? Why would they have gone to the extent they went to, and still go to, by the way, to prevent certain politics from appearing in film or on television? That's where, again, I think we need to look to extend more of these conversations. But again, I watch my own contradictions. I got to cut my own participation short. So thank you all.
Happy to have you, as always, Jared, regardless of the time limit. It's always fantastic. That's Dr.